this bill of comprehensive police reform to be... just got to be careful here with some gunshots. Excuse us.
Oi, bruv, a bit cheeky, isn't it? We're getting shot at by the Americans. Yeah, we call that revenge for the Boston Massacre. Hashtag never forget the Boston Massacre. Welcome back to Slightly Offensive, the worst, best show on Blaze TV. I have usurped power from Elijah Schaefer, who is out getting his sex reassignment surgery. We'll be coming back next week as Ellie Schaefer, and I'm trying to sort of transition the show, pun intended, I guess, from being the best worst show to being the worst best show. We are slowly climbing and ascending the hierarchy, so we are very excited about that. We are joined reluctantly by none other than Savannah Hernandez.
The person who makes sure this show actually gets put out. I'm sorry you guys have to watch it. It's not Elijah this week. It's John. So I'm doing my best. But
4 hours late, but here we're doing our best.
Here we are.
Right. So anyways, today we are going to talk about the 1 year anniversary of the George Floyd incident. We're going to talk about sort of group identities, different things that we have to talk about if we're going to exist in a multi-ethnic, multicultural society. We're going to go over the what, the how, and the why as to these sort of conflicts that we're seeing arise, why they're arising, the purpose of them as perpetrated by the sort of ruling class, elite types. And the first thing I do want to say is that you can observe tendencies within groups of people without assigning rules to them unfailingly. And this is important because when you have different groups of people living in a country operating under a liberal framework, you have to trust your deductive reasoning to be able to sort of understand how those groups behave and then use that to facilitate living in like a peaceful and prosperous society. And so the left wants to talk about diversity. You know, oh, diversity is our greatest strength and it's wonderful. The problem with that is they only go skin deep with that, like literally. Like diversity to them is just diversity of color. They don't really care about anything other than that. And this isn't to allude to the sort of like, well, intellectual diversity is important too. I'm not talking about intellectual diversity in the sense that like we also need diversity of people who think this way. Diversity means a lot more than that. It goes deeper on the iceberg than simply food and music and political opinion and whatever. There's a lot more to it. Attitudes on religion, if even is important, work ethic, family values, how they structure their societies, all sorts of things are very important. And so we have to observe these things and work within them if we're going to live in a multicultural society. It is important to note, and this conversation makes a lot of people uncomfortable for reasons that we'll talk about later. That's by design, because they don't want this country to be successful, because they want to basically usher in this authoritarian state over that. And that is inevitable. If you are living in a multicultural society, you are inevitably going to descend into that sort of authoritarianism to maintain stability if you don't have narrative consolidation, institutional consolidation, which we don't have. And so it is very important to talk about. So we will get into that. And also, I do have to say, just because it sort of gets into that, like, we're not having this conversation in bad faith. We're not having this conversation to sort of instigate conflict between groups. It is simply because liberals will pretend that there's absolutely no difference between anybody. We're all individuals. And we know that's not true. We know that cultures exist. We know that languages exist. There are things that are different. And so we have to acknowledge that. And then from there, work together to sort of accommodate that if we're going to be successful. Sav, have I crossed any lines? Am I offending anybody?
I'm just waiting for you to finish prefacing this show with this 4 minute long monologue. It's great.
Sav should actually be here, shouldn't she?
No, definitely not. I'm just excited to get into all of this this content today, because a lot's going on. Obviously, we opened up the show with that clip of the 1 year anniversary of George Floyd. They commemorated that with a drive-by shooting at the George Floyd Memorial. And yeah, we have a lot of good stuff in this script today.
Do you want to play that clip? Would that be too much to ask? Do you want me to come over and play it, or are you going to just...
Sure, I can try to do my job real quick.
This bill of comprehensive police reform to be... just got to be careful here with some gunshots. Excuse us.
He is literally in character. He is within dangerous distance of gunshots, but he is so in character that we're just going to make excuses for this behavior. We're just going to accommodate this. Then he's just, oh, excuse me. Oh, we got some gunshots, don't we? Let me just duck down a little bit. It's just like normal people, when they hear gunshots, would be like, oh, those are gunshots. They're like launching lead at me. I'm going to get out of here. But he keeps reporting and just like, oh, it's a mostly peaceful demonstration, mostly peaceful drive-by shooting. And I think this is important to note. The whole just paradigm of George Floyd versus someone like, let's say, Cash Gernon. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. Who was a toddler who about 25 minutes away from where we're recording right now, was kidnapped in the middle of the night, was dragged into the street, was alleged to have been sexually assaulted, and then was stabbed to death by a teenage black man. And so that child made local news. That incident made local news. I think there were some articles about it, not prime time coverage, but you get your article, your sort of consolatory article on some websites. But it's like, this is where the bar is. So if it's in support of the narrative, you have someone like George Floyd, who was a drug addict, who was a career criminal, who broke into a woman's house, who was pregnant, pointed a pistol at her stomach, her in utero child, as his accomplices robbed her house. And this person has been elevated to saint status. They literally have murals of George Floyd with angel wings on him. This is somebody who your children will learn about, even if they're born after the incident occurred. I think Vermont just passed legislation to commemorate George Floyd on his own day, George Floyd Remembrance Day. And just have to understand where the bar is for different things. Because this can happen to a white child who's 4 years old, 5 years old, I forget. And I forget because the story wasn't covered enough to drill it into my brain, whereas I could tell you every detail of the George Floyd case. And that's just swept under the rug because it's not convenient to the narrative. And so you really have to understand what's going on here. When they say Black Lives Matter, they mean Black Lives Matter specifically because they are black, and no other lives matter relative to that discussion. That is what they mean by that. And that is why someone like George Floyd, who, and you know, obviously George Floyd, you know, maybe he shouldn't have died. Maybe he shouldn't have overdosed. Maybe he shouldn't have put the fentanyl pills in his mouth when the officer approached him. Whatever. I don't think death is a good thing. That's not the point. The point is that when any bad things happen, you can examine them relative to other bad things. So, for example, a pedophile getting mugged and robbed and shot is probably going to be a little bit less bad than, you know, your grandmother being robbed and shot or whatever. We can examine things like that. The point being, the way the media chooses to cover things relative to how tragic they are. So you have a white child who's murdered and allegedly sodomized by a black teenager. That gets virtually no coverage, but Vermont has George Floyd Remembrance Day. So that's basically the paradigm in which we're operating. So it's great. We're super excited about it, I suppose. But yeah, and so even now, you know, they're describing that shooting, if they're describing it at all. You know, it's a mostly peaceful shooting. And then George Floyd's brother, even, he went online and he tweeted out that if you can make federal laws to protect the bald eagle, you can make federal laws to protect people of color. Murder is a felony. That is a felony. I think it's 93% of all murders where black men are the victims are done by other black men. Are perpetrated by other black men. And black Americans commit, I think, 52 to 56% of all homicides in this country. So that's already illegal. And then you can even extend the definition of life to where it should be as far as, you know, from conception, you look at abortions, vastly disproportionately perpetrated by black mothers. So those are all, and abortion should be illegal, which is the point there. So it's like, at what point are we going to acknowledge the problem for what it really is, which is this violence being perpetrated within the own community, as opposed to simply trying to sort of supplement it with these other answers that really just don't make sense? And the reason that that is the case, and it really does get down to simply my brother versus me. My brother is being bullied versus me bullying him, right? If you're at school and some other kid comes up to your brother and he starts picking on him, you're going to knock his teeth out, right? Maybe 20 years ago before we had the no tolerance policy. But you can go home and you can rag on him all you want. And it's different because it's like, it's your brother. It's your kin. It's the same thing we see here. That is why Black Lives Matter does not care about the violence happening in the inner cities. It is why they don't care about the evidence proving that defunding the police leads to additional homicides and additional victims, all of which virtually are black Americans. It is because it is the standard that matters. If they do it, they don't perceive it to be bad or an unjust attack on them because it's happening within that group. But if somebody else does it, whether that be a white police officer, it doesn't even matter. It does not even matter if it were in self-defense or like we saw in Ohio, if it were to save the life of another black person, it doesn't matter because it was someone who they perceive to be outside of the group attacking them. Regardless of reasoning, they view that as an attack on their identity. Because they believe that their identity is very central to themselves. You can look at Pew data on this, where the question is, you know, how would you describe your racial identity in terms of how important it is to your overall identity? Black Americans, upwards of 70%. Hispanic, Asian Americans, same thing. White people, it's like 10%. 25%, if that. And so the question basically becomes, given all of this, what else can be done? I mean, we have the war on poverty, which has been shown to be ineffective. We've poured probably $1 trillion, I think is the estimate by now, into these communities. We have affirmative action. We have specialized grants. This idea that you can solve these intercultural problems by simply throwing cash at it and opportunities is not the case. That is not the case at all. And liberal policies, and this is, gets back into, you know, group identity versus the individual, liberal policies fundamentally don't work because liberalism in itself is contrary to what nature is, contrary to reality. That's the whole idea of liberalism. They are trying to liberate themselves from the bindings of reality. So the individual, this hyper-autonomous individual, has complete control over anything that they want. That's what it is. The individual, too. That's a liberal idea. You know, we tend to defend classical liberalism as conservatives, which is kind of shooting ourselves in the foot, because classical liberalism, taken to its logical conclusion, of course, will manifest in leftism for reasons that we can get into at a later time. But it's like the individual. That doesn't exist. You might be smart enough and you might read enough books to view yourself as an individual. And of course, everybody, when they examine other people, you know, over coffee or whatever, we don't view them as members of groups. We view them as people, and we would never judge them on basis of group identity. However, when people do exist in groups, which they do in this country, that doesn't exist. There's no such thing as the individual. You are born and defined by the roles that you occupy as a human being. When you are born, you are not an individual. You are a son or you are a daughter, one of two. You grow older, you are a brother, a sister, something like that. We are defined by our social relationships. You are defined by your faith, by your nationality. There's no such thing as just this purely autonomous individual. And the fixation on that inevitably will destabilize societies, because right now, American culture as it exists is essentially an anti-culture, where the only thing we have in common is that we have nothing in common. And I guess that's just supposed to work, and it's going to be epic, and we all get to shop at the same shopping malls and see the same Marvel comic book movies where they promote Captain America being gay now, I guess. So that's really what it comes down to. Liberalism is idealism and conservatism is reality. Conservatism acknowledges the problems within these communities and we seek to solve that. Liberalism mobilizes the masses who are disassociated from reality, who view things in terms of idealism. Oh, but wouldn't it be great if we could just all view each other as Americans and individuals? But we don't have that control. If you wanted that to happen, you would need to control the narratives that would tell people this is what we're doing. The narratives that are being controlled are contrast to that are trying to divide people successfully to ultimately usher in a completely authoritarian state, which will be necessary. That's why, as society has destabilized over the last, let's say, 60 years as a metric, the trust in the country has dropped from like 75% to like 35%, roughly speaking. People are so anxious, they have such little trust in their neighbors that they are literally implicitly begging for that more authoritarian state to come in and control things. They need that stability in their lives. You have to have order if you want to have freedom. Edmund Burke, he wrote about this extensively. He was one of the founders of modern conservative thought. He looked at the revolution in France and he acknowledged that without order, you cannot have freedom. And the founding fathers knew this as well. James Madison, the father of the Constitution, wrote that the Constitution would not function if the people were not religious and they were not moral. We know this. We've known this for a while. Our ancestors knew this. We have abandoned it recently. And that's why you look at the tweet, the BLM activist was shot by four black men. And of course, the question would be, were these black white nationalists? Because it was immediately framed as, oh, her activism. That's why they took her down. Nobody should have to potentially pay with their life for standing up to white supremacy. It's like, she, as PJW, imagine my shock. She was shot by four black men. It's all about the framing. And this is another thing that gets into the idealism of how we frame things. Dr. Beatty and I touched on this in the episode that we did earlier this week. It's like, we would like to, in an ideal society, be able to turn on the news and just be able to see pure facts. And, you know, we all form our own opinions. We just want the facts. That is impossible. That is simply just not possible. There was no golden age of journalism. This has been going on for literally hundreds of years in this country. Everything that you read, there's an angle and there's a narrative that is being established. Whether or not that is true is another thing. We often hear this word bias and we're afraid of it. Oh, well, that's bias. I want something that's not biased. What does bias mean? If I say the sky is blue, I have a bias. If you say it's green, you have a bias. Bias is simply being rooted in some sort of opinion. It's impossible to achieve objectivity in these types of things. There are people who believe that George Floyd was murdered by Derek Chauvin, whatever. Those people exist in a misalignment with reality. But to them, what do they know? And maybe that's even true. Like, how do we even know what truth is? Nietzsche hit on this. We're getting deep today. I forgot what the quote was exactly, but it was essentially that truth is nothing without power. If we don't have the power in society to disseminate that truth effectively, someone's going to fill that vacuum and spread nonsense to the masses, which they will believe because politics is a spectator sport. 90% of people, perhaps naively, but understandably, want to just turn on the television and be convinced that they're being told the truth by the ruling class, by the state-adjacent media apparatuses, but that's not the case. And so that's why it is so important that we take the initiative and we are the ones who are disseminating information. And it's not like we're doing so maliciously. Like, we know that the truth is on our side, but it's just a matter of us having the conviction and the fortitude to actually do that, because that, at this point, is what's necessary to take back our country. There was another one, too. Yeah. Shot by four black men, the police say, but of course that was not hit on. And even then, it's very interesting to see the disassociation between what this really is, the racial grievance narrative as just one grift. Like, the goal is basically to exploit the grift to get yourself to a position where you don't have to face the consequences of those ideas, whether that's with buying three houses in like virtually all white neighborhoods, or this Atlanta councilman, Antonio Brown, he voted to defund the police, and then he just had his car stolen. The irony is rich there. The irony is rich. He wants to defund the police. He thinks that a social worker perhaps could have come to the scene and convinced the car thief not to steal the car, but of course, such is not the case. And that, of course, gets into the crime versus poverty argument. We recently had this in the Kenosha panel. These people think that poverty is what causes crime. It's not crime that causes poverty. Ignoring even that there's no evidence to suggest this, this is simply contrary to reality. But again, this is what they want to believe because it's ideal. It's ideal that we can achieve the perfectibility of the individual. If we could only get their blank slate to a good position, then there would be no crime. There would be no poverty. We could live in this utopian society. We can achieve this via redistribution of wealth and social workers. But of course, that's not how things actually work. Criminals respond to shows of force. If you wanted to bring prosperous economies back to these communities, you would literally need, and this is what the evidence suggests as well, you would need to put in basically like federal police, and you would need to achieve that stability and that order within those communities, which would then bring those businesses back to invest. Even if you put grants out, hey, we'll give you a grant, we'll give you write-offs or whatever, tax incentives to invest in these communities, in the net, it's not going to be worth it if that crime is there. If I know as a business owner, that investment is going to go down in value because of everything that's happening with the crime rates in this country. We are reaching the crime levels that we saw in terms of just homicide alone that we saw in the 1990s. There are now cities in America which per capita have higher homicide rates than like Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. It is insane what's happening. And it's even more insane that our media is refusing to report on it. Like what we saw in CHOP, these autonomous zones, right? Former Seattle police chief says media downplayed violence at CHOP to make it appear peaceful. So true. Why do they do that, though? We know that they do it. We know that they downplay it. We know that they control it. And we can tell that there's some sort of nefarious agenda to it, but we're not quite sure why. I will tell you why. It is because they are running defense for the greater purpose. It is quite literally a proxy war. The same way that when we want to do a regime change strategy in a different country, we will fund the insurgents and the terrorists who are going up against that regime that we don't like. The people in this country who don't like this country and don't like its values and everything that it stands for know that they can't explicitly come out and support that. So what do? They run defense. They stand down. They allow it to happen. They allow these actors, basically the result of mass mobilized mental illness, to do it for them, to commit violence and cause anarchy and chaos for them. This is what's referred to as state-enforced anarchy and chaos, which is against you, to subvert you, the patriot who cares about this country. So the state's not necessarily going to come to your door and take your guns away and arrest you, but the mob will, and the state will stand back. This is called anarcho-tyranny. It is a way, and the same thing happened during the Bolshevik Revolution and the USSR. The police were defunded. They were disbanded, not because they didn't think they needed police, but because they transferred that responsibility from that police force to the paramilitary units. What happens then? What happens then when the communists have control, when they're the authority? Mass graves. And we know this, but we think it won't happen to us. It's naive. Even in Chicago, the mayor proposes civilian council to oversee the police department. What's the result of that in Chicago, the south side of Chicago? We really want a civilian council overseeing that. It's the same thing. It's the brother versus non-familial concept of like they will come in and they will oversee it, and it doesn't matter. They will let these people go because they view it as an attack not on their community in an interpersonal way, but rather an outside attack coming from the police, which they believe are racist. And of course, we have the State Department with the Black Lives Matter flags too. There was another point I wanted to make on that, the civilian council overseeing the police department. That sort of gets into actually another thing we should have hit on earlier with the George Floyd thing. There was a take that was pretty common amongst very well-meaning people on the right, very well-meaning people who just simply don't understand the degree to which this has manifested in these different groups in this country. The well-meaning take from the well-meaning patriots was, I think that the jury's going to acquit Chauvin because Black Americans know how vital law enforcement is to their communities. And they know that, you know, it didn't happen the way that they're saying it did. And that literally, they delineated for like what, less than 48 hours? It's just not going to happen. He never had a chance. And that flag now is a greater symbol of American power, these social narratives, than even the American flag. There was a reason why it is being flown alongside the American flag in Spain, in Greece, Cambodia. They're all flying BLM flags. This is not to say that Black Lives Matter, and we're letting you know that. Do you think that people in Spain and Greece don't think Black Lives Matter? Of course they know that. What we're doing is basically mogging. We are mogging these countries with our social narratives, the same way we do it with LGBT rights in the Middle East, countries that are opposed to that nominally, these more authoritative, less, I guess, liberal countries. It's the same thing. It is not to say we're America and we believe Black Lives Matter. It's to say we're America and we can say whatever we want. We are going to degrade and impose our culture imperialistically. With imperialism, I guess would be the way to say it. And there's nothing you can do about it. It's simply a display of American power. And that's the same reason they do it domestically as well, letting people know we are the government. We are acting and existing adjacent to these narratives and these social movements, and we're going to impose them because we know it's not just as simple as Black Lives Matter. It's a great semantic strategy, but it's really not that simple. We know that they're Marxists. We know that they exist to disrupt and destabilize the country, the nuclear family. We know that, and that's why that exists in that way. That's the ultimate agenda. They can brand it as, oh, you don't think Black Lives Matter is a good idea? What do you think, lynching's a good idea? That's not the ultimate goal. It is the way for the American regime to signal to people who actually care about this country and its foundations that that is slowly going to deteriorate over time. It's the same thing. It's all theater. Same thing with the activists even. You know, we touched on this earlier, blowing millions of dollars on property empires, including homes in basically all white districts. Black women who are going into academia, they're saying that they want people to be able to do their hair for them. It's like these people have transcended the level of actually having conviction about these things, and they are now simply exploiting the grift for their own personal benefit. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. Zav, we good? What's your take?
Agreed.
You're going to be, I know that I am a man of many hats and I have lots of expertise.
So much expertise.
So much. Today, you are going to be my line expert. You're going to let me know if and when I've crossed the line.
You know, I'm not always the best with that, but I will try. I feel like this whole episode is like you trying to call out a specific community, which is a good thing to do, you know? You know, a lot of people won't talk about these subjects because they are very controversial and people are scared, especially people on the conservative side, of being branded a racist. But again, the whole concept of racism is, I believe, defined by the left, and it's a manipulation of our own language that the left has defined. So, you know, when you're called a racist in 2021, does it even really hold weight anymore because of how far the left has gone with their manipulations?
So true. So true. And that's the thing. I'm not doing this because I'm like really just, you know, want to take a crap on Black Americans. I'm not. I actually, this sounds so bad out of context. I actually really like Black people. I do. I grew up 15 minutes outside of Detroit, and it's just like, I want to see them succeed. And I just know that there are problems that people refuse to identify because, as Savannah pointed out, racism is the biggest fear that white people have in the world, being called a racist. And the reason for that is that there is billions of dollars worth of propaganda surrounding that term that all paints white people and white history and white countries to be bad and evil.
John, do you know what's not racist?
What's that?
Shopping on Blaze Media and getting some dope, slightly offensive merch. Sorry, guys, I'm going to butt in here because we are about, what, 25 minutes into the show. We haven't plugged our awesome merch yet, so let me just go ahead and bring this up really quickly. Since we're talking about such slightly offensive topics, John.
Only slightly.
Yeah, only slightly. I felt like it would be, like, you know, such a perfect segue to kind of plug our slightly offensive merch and really show our viewers what we have here. So, John, go ahead, take it away.
We have shirts.
Mm-hmm.
We have mugs.
Ah, mugs.
We have hoodies.
Hoodies. Who doesn't like a good hoodie?
Okay, that's too far.
No,
that's
no.
too far.
Yeah, these hoodies are so comfortable. Buy them.
We have hats. Mm-hmm. We have long sleeve shirts. We have
short sleeve shirts.
Well, I feel like that was almost is sort of inherent to the shirts. Whatever. Anyways, go buy the merch. How else are we supposed to know that you like the show if you are not representing that you like the show? We have to take back narratives. You need to be walking in to your store. You don't have a mask on because you're not a slave. You've got the slightly offensive shirt on. And somebody who's at the checkout, they see that. Perhaps they were thinking to themselves, you know, I like Elijah Schaefer and Slightly Offensive, but, you know, I'm kind of afraid to talk about it. But now that I see that guy doing it, I think that I'm going to stand up and I'm going to take a stand. That's what we need from you. Go buy the merch. If you buy the merch, Savannah will answer your email. So true.
Exactly, guys. Exactly. Also, did you know that buying our merch raises your IQ points by at least 1,000? Yeah, that's not scientifically backed or proven, but I'm just going to throw it out there and hope for the best.
True, true. Savannah put the hoodie on. We got her up to a 1085 IQ. It was great. Anyways, moving on. The point being, narrative control is imperative if we're going to move forward as a country. That is the point. If you want to wake up these other groups, you want to get Black Americans off the Democrat plantation, which is what it's referred to as, you want to further consolidate Hispanic support for conservatives, you have to control narratives. It is imperative. There is no other way. News shouldn't be narratives, but it is. It just is. Anyways, it's time to address the most important question.
What's that?
The utter state of white women. The utter and absolute state of white women in this country.
See, I thought you were just going to target women as a whole, so I guess it's kind of refreshing that as not a white woman, I'm not in this category today, but I'll still take slight offense because I am a woman.
That's what, it makes me laugh because everybody, they see the way I interact with like you and Kez and people, and they're just like, oh, he's flirting with them. You know me well enough. I just abuse women. I just enjoy bullying women. It's just a hobby of mine. You know, some people play instruments. Some people build birdhouses. I just enjoy.
Some people are self-conscious because they are young up-and-comer and they have to, you know, bully the women around them or that are also equally successful. But whatever. It is what it is.
So true. I'm really punching up, Savannah, even though I have 15 times the influence that you have.
You really do. You really do, little Mijo. You really do.
Ah! Please. Whatever.
Keep telling us all of your intellectual brain.
I will actually, unapologetically. Okay, we'll take a break from the Savannah, the anti-Savannah rhetoric. We'll get into the anti-white woman rhetoric. I saw this video. I don't know what country this originated in. Can you play it? The feminist one where she's like literally screaming for no other purpose than to scream.
That's as loud as I can make it.
Can you translate?
So as a fellow woman, she's probably angry at the patriarchy, one. She is probably feeling an inherent racism because she is white.
Ah.
So she's trying to get all of that aggression and anger out. And she probably also misses her cat. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of that frustration too.
If I had to explain to an alien what a woman was, I would simply just show them that clip. And that's like really what it is. I have no issue with women. I have no issue with women in politics. I simply observe trust my deductive reasoning that women tend to basically try to derive external gratification and validation from any sphere that they occupy.
See, but you say this is a white woman thing, but I feel like this is, like, the screaming right here is probably, like, an all-woman thing. I could definitely say that I probably...
I agree, but I told you that I would take it easy on women in general today. And so it's like this, you see AOC, they are so... Like, that's female nature. They just want to find a way to, you know, get the spotlight on them. I'm just going to scream and make my statement. And it's like, you would never... This is not...
Women want the spotlight on them? What are you talking about?
It's just true. Yeah, it's so true. I'm vindicated. I am bathing in vindication at all times. It's just a matter of whether or not people are going to catch up to it. Like David Hogg, for example. David Hogg is a feminine man. Mm-hmm. He would do something like this, and he does things that effectively are adjacent to this. He went on, what was it, MSNBC or something?
CNN,
all the same. And he was like, Americans are increasingly buying guns because of other Americans' skin color and immigration status and gender and sexual identity. Look at the utter state of that man.
He looks sad. He looks like he needs a steak.
Okay, Sav, you take a trip. You're going on Tinder because you're desperate. You find David Hogg's profile.
Uh-huh.
You swipe right because it's David Hogg.
Mm, clearly, yes.
What's your opening line?
Oh, I wasn't expecting to be put on the spot like this. Yeah, there wouldn't be no swiping right. Savs don't do Tinder, one. And two, why would I do that to myself? Look at this. Look at the absolute state of this man right here. Who, like, why does he have better hair than me, one? And also, why are his shoulders more narrow than mine as a man?
It is very sad, too, because that is a very extreme case, and it's a tragedy. That being said, what they're doing isn't not effective. Bringing on a school shooting survivor, granted he biked to get there, whatever. Bringing somebody on to market gun control, politically speaking, that's a good idea. I think that the right should do more of that. I think I brought this point up last time with bringing on victims of, or the mothers of illegal, or mothers of children who have been murdered by illegal
angel
aliens.
Moms, yeah.
Yeah, the angel moms. They should be put on Fox News. They should be put at the front of everything for the public to see. There are ways to do this so that you're not lying to people, but you're kind of just, you know, it's being strategic with the way that you're disseminating information. And the right doesn't do this because we just want everyone to figure it out for themselves, because we think that everybody is just as interested in research and facts and logic as we are, but they're just not. Most people are dumb. If you've ever driven before, if you've ever driven before, if you've ever been on the internet before, you know that most people are dumb and they get to vote. Sleep well with that knowledge. So Sav wrote a note here. She said, single white mothers are the greatest threat to the Western world. Please elaborate.
I did not write that note. That was something that was written on Twitter from the video I was pulling, and that's what it was captioned.
Play the video. Okay. Justify your take.
Let's go ahead and just play this quick video.
Hi there. My name is Sarah.
This little cutie is my son, Bennett.
As you can see, my son is a white male. So here are some books that I bought to help prevent him from growing up to be awful. Mm. Starting out strong, we have C is for Consent.
Did you read that, John?
Pretty self-explanatory, but it's
Consent is boring.
Picture book that goes into detail.
I don't even want to have this conversation. Women
Along
don't.
On that same note, we have Will Ladybug Hug. Teaches the same kind of concept in a more childish way, mm-hmm. about a ladybug who is hugging his friends. Even has one friend who doesn't like hugging.
You know what the worst part about this is, in my opinion?
This one is called Only for Me.
That she is playing a character. It's performative. The way that she like adds a little dot, 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 awful. Like she knew what she was going to say before that. That video was premeditated. But she had to like have this little like quirky like, I didn't know what to say. Awful. It's like she knew what she was going to say before, but she's acting like it was just, you know, oh, I'm looking for a word. I'm searching. And then just, you know, slip that little in, you know, give the audience a second to be like, what's she going to say? What's she going to say? I'm on the edge of my seat. And then she said, awful. It's so sad.
You know, there's multiple layers to this video. And one of them is, why the hell do we have so many books targeted at children, making them feel bad for their skin color, making them want to walk on eggshells in regards to normal everyday experiences in society? And two, we have mothers now that are teaching their children to hate themselves for their skin color. Again, I've gone and I've gone to several BLM protests, and I'll go up to people and ask them to apologize for their skin tone, and they will, because they're white and they think that as a brown person, they should automatically be apologizing to me. And I think that it's so sad that we have members in society now who are willing to even do that and feel like they should be apologizing for the way that they were born. And so RIP to this kid. This is child abuse, to be quite honest with you. It really is.
Yeah, it's absolutely tragic that this is happening. And that's what I would refer to as the iron law of propaganda, that the sooner you start, the less it has to make sense. And molding a child's brain when it is the most plastic into feeling ashamed for their skin color is probably the second worst thing that you could do to them, the first being sexual assault or something, which a lot of these people tend to do anyways because they're perverted. So Teen Vogue, it is what it is. And I had this epiphany. I was in a bookstore back in Michigan. What was I looking for? I don't remember which book I was looking for, but I saw this like, what do they call those things? You know, on the end of aisles, what are those called? End caps?
I guess so.
And there was like, you know, starter like witchcraft stuff, how to like cast spells, all this like, like little witchcraft.
Yeah.
I don't know if the audience is primarily Christian, but I would assume such. And I just kind of thought to myself that if that were to be publicized or put out in the open like that 30 years ago, you'd have like Christians going in there and like tackling it and like destroying it, knocking it over. I'm not calling for that. I'm simply saying that what this is satanic. And they're disseminating that to people. Literal Satanism. Occult worship, things like that, using menstrual blood in witchcraft for 12 to 17 year olds. That is satanic.
I'm sitting over here, like, kind of reading into this article.
You're like, ooh, how do I try? How do I cast a spell?
I threw this into the script because I thought it was just straight up insanity. Again, this is a media publication that is read by children. And why in our society are we targeting children so much? I mean, you explained it already. Their minds are very malleable at this period of time. And this is what we're teaching them. We're teaching them how to worship Satan. We're teaching them how to hate their skin tone. We're teaching them to cut off their genitals, that, you know, if you feel a certain way, you can put a knitted penis in your diaper and that's all okay. And it's absolutely not. And it just really breaks my heart to just see the absolute state of our society and the future generations that we're bringing up right now.
Yeah, and I don't enjoy preaching because I know that a lot of people, maybe they aren't religious, maybe they don't have their mind made up especially, but I think it's really important to understand that the conflict that we're going through in this country has been and always will be a spiritual conflict. It's always good and evil. It's always mm-hmm. the same thing. And you can see this reflected in every element of our culture. And this is actually what brought me back to the faith. I went through my like edgy atheist phase, mm-hmm. and then I started realizing that every virtue as outlined by Christ is being reflected in its opposite by the mainstream narrative. So like I have it here, the seven virtues, chastity, the opposite being lust. We know that that's promoted. Sexual degeneracy, hookup culture, sex weeks on college campuses, sexualizing children even, the ultimate goal being the corruption of innocence and all that is good. Temperance, what's the opposite of that? Gluttony, subsidizing corn syrup, subsidizing processed meats and sugars that make people fat. It's like, everybody is, what is it, like 30-something percent now of the country is like obese. I think a majority are at least overweight. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like this back in the day. Have you ever seen a fitness video from the 1960s of like a public high school?
Everyone's a Chad. Have you ever seen those pictures of like the beach back in the 50s and there's not one obese person?
Return. And that, honestly, this is a take and I can't prove this empirically, but I feel that it is true and so I will assert it as such. The destruction of California has to be a psyop. It has to be a top-down psyop. That was done intentionally. California is the most beautiful state in the country, widely regarded to be at least. And it was so great, such a cultural place. Everybody wanted to go to Los Angeles. And then it was destroyed over the course of about 40 years. And now nobody wants to go there. People are fleeing from there en masse. But again, that's the agency of the individual. They are not realizing that their policies and the consequences of them are why California took a dump. And so they're moving to Texas, they're moving to Georgia, and they're going to vote for the same policies because they simply don't have the agency to realize. Charity. I will take what I have earned and I will give it to you because I realize that you are in need. The opposite of that is greed. I am entitled to what you've earned. I'm entitled to it. I don't have to earn anything. I'm entitled to what you earned. Diligence, which is like persistence, I guess. What is it? Effortfulness. Ethics. Opposite being sloth. Everyone's lazy. I'm going to watch Netflix. Not because I want to watch something. I just want to be entertained. I'm going to sit back and I'm just going to browse Netflix endlessly until I find something versus the Chad going to Blockbuster because you want to rent Peter Jackson's King Kong and you go there and you take it to the counter and the guy's like, you're actually not going to like that one. You should probably just go with Godzilla or whatever. The point being, convenience is not something to be aspired to unfailingly. Blockbuster was better, but it wasn't convenient. And so now we have eroded that part of our culture. Blockbuster nationalism. I want to bring it back. For what? Netflix? Eternal.
And you know what, too, John? Just on the whole subject of Netflix as well, because we were talking about, too, how no one really has an attention span anymore. And that's even worse now because of TikTok, which, again, targeted towards the youth in America.
It is a Chinese psyop to destroy white women.
Yes, but again, too, I deleted it off my phone because I was getting to the point where if a video, which the TikToks are like, 30 seconds long, if they didn't entertain me fast enough, I would swipe up. And I realized that I had this for a week. I was staying up until 3 a.m. watching it. It's highly addicting, and it was destroying my attention span in 1 week.
Yeah, that's another thing I wanted to hit on as well. Time preference is very important. In our generation, the younger people, we have, because of technology like that and just constant access to information, we have literally eroded our attention spans mm-hmm. and our time preference.
Yeah.
And that is the problem, because to take back our country requires a very slow, very concentrated, very motivated effort to march through the institutions the same way that they did over the course of the last, I think, 95 years now. That time preference that's necessary to delay and defer that gratification is something that literally biologically does not exist with young people anymore because of technology like TikTok.
And see, too, in regards to conservatism and where it's at today as well, I feel like we hear the same old, tired, regurgitated socialism is bad talking points from conservatives because it takes a lot more effort to sit down and read a book than it does to watch a quick video on how socialism is bad. You know what I mean? Like a 2 or 3 minute video about the same old talking points. It takes a lot more effort to read a book. It takes a lot more effort to read white papers, to read a study, to understand how we really got here and look at it in a historical perspective and a psychological perspective. So again, you know, it happens on both sides too. Like, this is an issue very central to conservatives, young conservatives as well.
Yeah. And that's the other thing that gets back into what we've been talking about with narrative control. Socialism doesn't work. Everybody knows that. It was disproven in theory by Hayek, namely. There were two main arguments, which I forget now, arguments basically saying that, a centralized economy could never be as efficient as a distributed economy because it would never be able to take into account all the relevant factors. And then there was another one about something else. I don't remember. Socialism sucks. That's the bottom line. And then it was proven to be disastrous in practice by the USSR, all the countries that experimented with it. 100 million people died because of that ideology. That is the most evil ideology to ever be created by anybody ever. But anyways, the other virtues, patience, opposite being wrath, kindness, envy, humility, and pride. They literally have Pride Month, a month dedicated to pride. If you think that satanic forces exist, which they do, by the way, do you think that the devil doesn't laugh at that? The point being that you have to be rooted in something. You have to understand good and evil forces, because if there is no objective source to outsource that to, it's just matter moving around. We have no purpose. There is no good and evil. It's only different points of views rooted in what's conducive to whatever we arbitrarily decide is important. Anyways, moving on to, can a toothbrush be sexist? Very important. Can a toothbrush be sexist? Why am I paying $9,000 for this? Did you go to college?
I did, unfortunately.
Makes sense. I did not go to college. I epically dropped out of community college. We love to see it. And the reason for that is two things. One, I didn't think that I was learning anything. And two, I wanted the title of community college dropout because I knew that I was going to be successful. If you aren't trying to be a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer, if you're simply going to get a degree in sociology or a humanities thing, it is a waste of your money. There is nothing that can be learned in those classrooms that cannot be learned by buying used books from a bookstore. The problem is that degree doesn't symbolize that you're smart. It symbolizes that this institution has said that you know how to do things or whatever. Okay, folks, go to Blaze TV, get the subscription. It helps us. It helps me. It helps Sav. It helps Ellie. Do you know how expensive that surgery is that she had to go through and is recovering from right now? How else are we supposed to affirm her and validate her in her transition? Go to Blaze TV, subscribe today, use the code Elijah. They're going to change it for $10 off, blazetv.com/Elijah. It lets us know that you like us. It lets the company know that you like us. And it lets yourself know that you like us, because actions speak louder than words. That will internally communicate a greater message than if you just simply subjectively decide that, oh, I guess I enjoyed listening to this or whatever. Anyways, this is the part where we talk about critical race theory. And this part might make you uncomfortable a little bit, and I implore you to listen through regardless, and I will explain why it makes you uncomfortable. I do want to start with that article, I Hate Whiteness, during the critical race theory rant in the New York Post, who is a white woman, by the way, posts epic critical race theory rant. She says she hates whiteness. This is the same thing with the grift, the racism grift of, I am going to denounce myself as a white person because I know that I can get money for it. It's literally the equivalent of male feminists. Hey, babe, I think that you should have rights. It's like simping in a way. But I guess the positive side to that would be that you have GOP-led states going after critical race theory in schools. This is very important. I am very surprised that the GOP is actually doing this and taking action, but it is probably the most important thing that they could be standing up against right now, and I will explain why. And then, of course, the pushback to that is that laws against teaching critical race theory in college are unconstitutional because all of a sudden they care about the Constitution. Their theory, critical race theory, the consequences of that, if allowed to propagate 30 years from now, will virtually erase the Constitution. It will erase the Constitution, but they will cite that now when it is convenient to them, not out of principle, but out of convenience. And here's why that's important. Critical race theory, properly understood, is the theory that the only race that you are allowed to be critical of is white people. That is what it actually means in practice. It is not racism, because racism would mean that it's universally applied, but it's not. It is all anti-white rhetoric. Why is that? Why? We know that it's true. We know whether we targeted or we covered the George Floyd versus the cash I don't even remember his last name story earlier, Cannon Hinnant, who was executed in his front lawn. No one talks about that anymore. He was 5 years old. It's not racism. It's not being universally applied. It is specifically and purposefully anti-white. And it's not fascism. It's not, well, the left are the real fascists. It's the same thing. Ceding ground to the left, they have built up an infrastructure of media with billions of dollars worth of propaganda defining fascism as something that's bad. That's not to say that it's good. It is simply to say that they have made it equivocal or equivalent to anything that is right wing. So you will never beat them by saying, well, you're actually the real fascist trying to appeal to a moral framework, which they have established and that you have no part in. That gets back to that Elijah tweet where he mentioned, what did he say? Did a white nationalist create critical race theory? It says the country was built by white people for white people. Whiteness created a strong central unity that made us dominant in the world. Sounds like this could be used to radicalize young white men, maybe ban it. I mean, here's the thing. America is rooted primarily in two things, English common law tradition and Greco-Roman tradition, with influences from the Christian tradition as well. The point of that being, we exist as Americans for a reason. We're not an idea. We are a nation of people. If the people who came over here to settle America, not immigrant, but settle America, if they were from Portugal, we would be Brazil. If they were from France, we would be Canada. But we're not. We are America for a reason. And it is up to us to acknowledge that and to use that responsibly to actually create the society that our founding fathers wanted us to have. We have drifted so far away from that that even conservatives misunderstand what the point of this country was supposed to be. We do not exist collectively to simply exist on the same geography. We all get to go to Yosemite together. That's not what this country is about. This country needs to have a purpose. And right now we don't feel as though we have one. And that is why China and Russia are literally laughing at us. Anyways, that is my monologue. We have two reviews. We love reviews, don't we, folks? We have review number one coming to us from O2STI. I don't know what that means. They say, good guests and salve.
Wait, I'm sorry. What is this a review of? What are we reading right now? Is it a podcast review?
Yep, Sav, it's a podcast review. Did you just want to actually take this one?
No. Go read it. I just wanted to remind all of our listeners, of course, to go leave us a 5-star review. And if you do, you could have the chance to have your review read on air, just like what's going to happen right now.
And you implied that I was illiterate because I wasn't reading it properly. You need to learn your past tenses. Well, besides the 8K graphics they constantly brag about, true, we are a little prideful on this show, aren't we? It really is a good podcast that I often wish was longer. Yeah, Sav's telling me to wrap it up after 57 minutes. They wish it were longer, Sav. I'm giving the people what they want. Power to the people. You're the authoritarian.
I know.
You're the threat to democracy.
I know. So true.
Having John Doyle on multiple times and Sav as the producer might have been the best choice Elijah has ever made. So true, folks. Can you please have Elad on? Is that Barely Informed with Elad?
Mm-hmm.
We love that guy. Okay, review number two coming to us from T-Leg. We love T-Leg, don't we, folks? The best show ever made by anyone in any country. This is the best podcast available to anyone about anything. Elijah's commentary grants us a 10 IQ boost every time I watch, and it probably makes John Doyle jealous. Okay, if I respond to that, I sort of vindicate what he's saying about jealousy, so I can't even correct it. Yeah, I'm so jealous. I wish I were Elijah Schaefer. Oh, and Savannah's pretty cool too.
Thank you.
How do you feel? How do you feel about that? Just like,
love the podcast reviewers. They're so nice to me, and I usually try to pick reviews that don't have my name in them, but a lot of them do. What can I say? The people love me. I love you guys too. Keep leaving reviews.
All right, folks. That about wraps it up for us today. This is the result of too much caffeine and dressing up like DaBaby. We go a little off the goop, we get a little close to the line, and we get our words out too quickly, but it's okay. We love it, we love the people. So, go leave the 5-star review, go subscribe at Blaze, go get the merchandise, and yeah, any final thoughts? Anything to say to the people?
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We're signing out.